Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everybody. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Michael Bumpus in for the vacationing Jim Moore this week. We've got a good show coming up for you today. Shannon Dreyer will join us at the bottom of the hour. We'll talk some baseball with our Mariners insider. At 4 o'clock, the professor John Clayton will be with us. So if you guys want to start now, you can start texting in questions for John. We'll have that at 4 o'clock. And then Paul Moyer, who's become a listener favorite and a favorite of ours, will join us at 5 o'clock to talk some football. But guys, we touched on this briefly yesterday with John Clayton, and I was thinking about this the other night, and we've spent a lot of time talking about the window for this team and talking about taking advantage of the window's closing, the window's open. That's a popular term, and it speaks to the limited opportunity that teams have when they've got a core or a quarterback or, more importantly, a head coach in place in their prime. What's the window for Pete Carroll? Pete Carroll is going to turn 69 years old in September, and he's the youngest 68-year-old I've ever seen in my life. So he looks like he's got the energy to go until he's 168. But you look at the oldest coaches ever, and Marv Levy and I think George Halas both coached until they were 72. Tom Coughlin, Dick Vermeil, they were 69 when they retired. Belichick just turned 68. Arians is turning 68. Should we be looking at a window for Pete Carroll? Should we be assuming? I know Clayton, I think, said he expects that he'd sign at least another deal for a couple more years. His deal ends at the end of next season, at the end of 2021. Should we be looking at Pete Carroll's window, talking about Pete Carroll's window?
I hate bringing it up. I don't even want to talk about it. I don't want to know this team without Pete because, man, he's just meant so much to Seattle. And you know, he's kind of like Russell. I mean, look, Russell's getting on in age. It's his ninth year coming up, but he's never been hurt. And I feel like Pete is almost younger than he was when he came in here. So, but, you know, I'll say this. If it is, let's say he has another couple, 3 years, whatever, I think it's Russell's team. And Russ and Pete have kind of almost grown together as one. I feel like they reflect each other. And so, you know, if it does, Pete does leave and Russ is here, he's going to be kind of, it's going to be kind of Russ's team. It really is. And I'm sure a lot of people look at it that way as far as Aaron Rodgers goes and as far as Tom Brady goes. So, yeah, I feel like, he'll be ready for that at that time when Pete's gone. But, yeah, I don't even want to think about this team without Pete. But, I wanted to say those two guys growing together, my favorite scene, and I've said this before, of Seahawk football probably ever, was after the Monday night game when they beat the 49ers and Pete and Russ were like hugging each other and grabbing each other and smiling and laughing and running out to the middle of the field. That to me was just like those two guys are one. And I just loved that moment. But, it also, this last year is when I realized like Pete or Russ has really become a lot like Pete, and Pete has become a lot like Russ, and those two guys are almost like they're one. And you talk about synergy. The definition is, one plus one equals three, and I feel like that's what they get out of that relationship.
Yeah, it's a great relationship, and we have to be realistic, right? Pete Carroll, he said he's going to be 69 in September. I mean, he probably does have about 3-4 more years, I would say. If I had to put a number on it, I'd say maybe 3 or 4. And I would say Russell Wilson probably has prime years about 3 or 4 years. So I think they're going to get through this together. There's going to be a time where Pete Carroll has to leave. What's the greatest thing Pete Carroll has done for this organization is create that culture, right? When I was with the Seahawks, Holmgren was on his way out. Jim Moore was on his way in. They were grooming Jim Moore to take over Holmgren's spot. Now, it didn't work out the way everybody wanted it to work out, but I would think that in this situation, Pete Carroll will start grooming somebody to take this thing over and just to keep it rolling. Whoever comes in next, you have to make it your own. but you can't ignore what's been here for about 10 years. And you kind of take a piece of that with you. And with Russell still being there, Dave, and you talk about their relationship, I mean, he could be in the forefront and really keeping the culture rolling. You have a franchise quarterback. You have a guy who's won. You have a guy who knows what winning looks like. So I would assume that Russell Wilson will play a huge role winning if the next guy comes in.
Now, I feel as long as you got Russ, you're going to win. And there are some people, and you can text in 710-710 to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. And we've gotten these texts, I feel like, since the Super Bowl loss, right? It's they've slowly increased each year that somehow Pete's in the way, or somehow Pete is old school and he doesn't get the new school. And especially when McVay and the Rams were, you know, looking incredibly innovative and exciting on offense, and, you know, Pete stuck in this, you know, 3 yards in a cloud of dust mentality, you know, almost acting as if they're winning in spite of Pete. And listen, if that's your opinion, that's fine. I'd love to hear why you think, you know, Pete's not as valuable or you're not as worried about Pete leaving. Again, text into 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. But there is a segment, and I think it's a small segment of the fan base that feels like Pete gets in the way. Maybe it's the cooking people, as Jim calls them, Dave, you know, that Pete and the offense gets in the way of Russell. And it's really, you know, Russell will win with anybody. As long as you got Russell, you're going to be just fine. And part of me feels that way, but I feel like we don't really appreciate how good of a head coach Pete Carroll is. He is a Hall of Fame coach. He has done it at the college. He revived a dead USC program. He came in here and took a floundering Seahawks program and turned them into a perennial winner, where you just expect postseason every year, not Super Bowl. Yeah, you hope. It's not realistic to expect to get there every year, but you expect to be a winning team each and every. You haven't had that rebuild year. You haven't had that 4-win season that the Rams have had, or the 3 or 2-win season that the 49ers have had. Look at every team in this division. They have hit rock bottom at some point, and that has not happened under Pete. In the years they expected him to rebuild, this was a double-digit win team. So I just feel like he doesn't get appreciated enough. Doesn't mean every call on the field works, or he always makes the best decision with timeouts and all of that. He's not perfect. But he is a great coach, and I was just looking at his age and going, yeah, he doesn't look like he's slowing down anytime soon, but how long can we realistically expect him to be there?
Yeah, well, you make a great point about that, of not being a down year, Bob, because then, you know, you don't get like what the Niners got, the number 9 pick, the number 3 pick, the number 2 pick. I mean, there's just been none of that. So, you know, that's what's hurt them a little bit too. What, the worst has been 7-9. So yeah, it's and they made the playoffs that year, so it's a lot harder for him. You know, it's funny. You know, they talk about like these progressive coaches, like just because they're young. Kyle Shanahan, I mean, their run game there, and same thing in Baltimore. It's kind of a bludgeoning type of old school run game, and some of the plays that they call, you know, are little traps and things like that they just execute better than other people do, and that's the reason why they're having so much success offensively. You know, look, I mean, Lamar Jackson is incredibly dynamic, and he's just such an amazing athlete and so fun to watch and everything. But, you know, I look at some of the play calls from John Harbaugh, and then same thing with Kyle Shanahan. It's not like they're revolutionary. So, you know, Pete's always seen as this old school guy because he likes to run the ball, but he also likes to take shots down the field, and that's not something that's a characteristic of an old school coach. And then they want to play good, tough, strong defense. So, you know, those things play no matter what. And we always talk about it, the run game, turnovers, going into the playoffs, those are the most important thing. And those are the things that Pete Carroll has done so well. So, but your point about them not having that bad year and having the rebuild, you know, I mean, shoot, you remember the year coming in when they were able to, they had Russell Okung and Earl Thomas that they picked in the top 10 or 12 or 15. They've just not had that ever since he came in here. So, yeah, it's a real testament to him as far as, and I know people get frustrated, like, well, going to the playoffs and losing is not really a you know, a successful season. But I mean, I think there's a lot of those teams that he did take to the playoffs and maybe lost in the first and second round that other coaches wouldn't have got him that far in the first place.
Yeah, I caution people, you don't know what you got till it's gone. You know, I was on the team 08, 09, and we weren't very good, and people are booing and stuff. And it's crazy how sometimes people forget those days, you know. Winning kind of makes you entitled at times, you know. So I get people critiquing some of the decisions that Pete Carroll has made. Trust me, after a loss, coaches critique the heck out of themselves. You think he goes home and sleeps well after a loss? Of course not. At the end of the day, all you want is a chance to win a football game, right? At the end of the game, do we have a chance to win a football game? And more times than not, the Hawks have a chance to win football games. Do they win all of them? No, that's not going to happen, and it doesn't happen. So you may disagree with his methods, with his time management, his influence on defense, his influence on offense. But at the end of the day, more times than not, you have a chance to win a football game. And I think that's what fans want, especially when you're at home and the crowd's going crazy. You want to be there all the way till the fourth quarter. When you got fans leaving in the third quarter, you know something's up. And honestly, I haven't seen that since, 2018 when the Rams came in here and just smacked us. You know what I mean? Be careful what you wish for. You don't know what you got till it's gone. Let's just ride this wave and see what these next 3 or 4 years look like.
Yeah, it's just interesting. And again, you guys can text into 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. You look at these franchise, like the Browns, right? We're all celebrating Stefanski. Well, now they got a guy. Well, how do we know? They've had a new coach almost every year, it feels like. You see coaches come in and out of situations, whether you're talking about Cleveland, whether you're talking about Chicago, whether you're talking any of these franchises, and the amount of turnover they have at that spot is crazy. And just it's kind of like searching for that franchise quarterback. You keep trying, and this guy's not it, You look at Detroit, you look at all these other organizations that just cannot land the guy. And again, I understand Pete is frustrating to some people, and you see it, you know, on the text, some of the people making decent points. I don't necessarily agree, but some of them, you know, saying because you've had 5 terrible drafts in a row, refusing to play offense, punt/field goal on every 4th and 1 inch, that dinosaur model of trying to win games, 9-7. That's not a unique opinion. There are other people that feel like he's a little old school, a little too conservative at times, and that's fine. As I said, he's certainly not a perfect coach, and not every call works, and not every, you know, you can sit there and go, well, why is he doing that? I get it. You know, another one saying, you know, if they only make 1 Super Bowl in Russell's time there, I'm going to feel like it's a disappointment. That's fine. When all is said and done, if we only have 1 Super Bowl during Wilson's time here, I'm not going to necessarily miss Pete. Just my opinion, says the 425. Fair enough. I don't think he's above reproach. I don't think he's beyond criticism, but overall, if you want to compare the success of this franchise and look at other teams in this league and how they've gone up and down with those extreme records, and you brought up the draft picks, Dave, and that's a great point with them being as consistent as they are. They continuously pick in the bottom of the first round. That's just where they've been because they've been successful. Other teams get a chance to rebuild because they've gone through that disaster of a season of 3 wins, 4 wins, 5 wins. Just hasn't happened here. Whether you think it's in spite of him, or because of him, it hasn't happened.
Well, here's the other thing. You're right about Pete, not beyond reproach, right? Because, you know, I did a thing this year, wrote an article about the New Orleans game, and it was entitled "It's Not What You Think," because all we talk about is the defense and how they blew it last year and everything. But you know, there was 2 special team plays that cost them 14 points. One was a punt return. The other was Al Woods lining up over the center on a missed field goal that ended up being a touchdown. But one of the other things is there was some mishandling of the clock at the end of the first half. And, you know, that's been sort of a bugaboo of Pete's. But, you know, I'll say this, and I'll ask you, Bump, because you're a coach, and I've coached, but I've never been a head coach. Coaching, everybody thinks it's about X's and O's. Really what it is it's about getting the most out of your players. And you know, and I know that these guys love and respect him, and so what we're going through right now, especially, you know, with all the stuff that's going on in our country, I don't think that there's a better coach for that kind of thing, as far as bringing guys together. And we talked about that going, you know, a couple of days ago. Is this, Bob, I think you brought it up, is this an opportunity for the Seahawks to really come together as a team and really bond? And Pete is that guy. And so that's really what coaching is about. I mean, sure, it's managing timeouts and what kind of call, and everybody complains about that. But what about what Pete gets out of his players? I just wonder how many of these free agents and how many of these late-round draft choices like Chris Carson, other teams would get that out of them. But Pete just draws everybody's best out of them, and I think the reason why is he goes in expecting the best out of players. He expects the most out of them. He's not critical. He's not like, yeah, this guy, well, we'll see if it works or not. He's like encouraging, like, hey man, you got a shot here. You're one of these guys. He inspires people, in other words.
Yeah, you know, you're right, Dave. As a head coach, right, he has his offensive coordinator, he has his defensive coordinator. He oversees the offense and the defense, but he is the one who sets the tone every day at practice, right? He's the one who sets the tone at team meetings. If these guys weren't focused in team meetings, if they weren't having good practices, then we wouldn't see the product that we see on the field on Sundays. Now, the offensive and defensive coordinator do have input. They do take care of the little things. They cross the T's and dot the I's. But at the end of the day, Pete's going to take credit for all the losses, and then he's going to praise everybody else for all the wins, and that's what I feel like a good head coach does. Now, he is in charge of little things. We mentioned time management, when to kick a field goal, when to punt, and you can disagree with that if you want to, and you're allowed to. It's all good. There's always going to be moments and decisions in a game that you don't necessarily agree with. I can look at any game of football and question something that a coach has done. You know, when it comes to play calling, he leans on his coordinators a bit. I think he's more involved with the defense. But his main job is to come to work every single day and set the example. And for a 68-year-old dude, I mean, we've been to the practices, right? We see the way he's bouncing around, throwing the football. Like, he really enjoys being there, and it doesn't look like a job for him. And I've been on bad teams. I've been on bad teams in the NFL. And when you're losing, when you're getting your butt kicked, man, that job is tough. You don't feel like showing up. And he has found a way to get guys to show up when things are down and to keep guys motivated. So there are a lot of things that he does behind the scene. Now, let's not forget what he does. I mean, he's upstairs. You know, him and Schneider are best friends. They're going at it. They're talking about moves. So I think he's doing a good job. There's always room for improvement. You know, unless you win every single game in a season, which we've only seen once, there's always room for improvement. And I think Pete knows that, and we'll see some improvement.
Now, I know we've got take two coming up here, but just for those that are sort of on the other side saying, you know, man, only one Super Bowl with that defense and Russell Wilson and all of that, they've underachieved. Is that fair? Is that a fair criticism to say, you know what, they probably should have two Super Bowls, three Super Bowls? I mean, it's hard. Dave, you said it, and Bump, you know it. You guys play in the league. It's hard to win on any given Sunday, but much less win a Super Bowl. So is that a fair criticism considering the level of talent they've had specifically on defense for a number of years with Russell Wilson? Should we be talking about more than one Super Bowl win? Is that a fair criticism?
Well, people will bristle at this, but I would say, well, maybe another coach doesn't get as much out of these guys that he has and give them the confidence. I mean, we're talking about a third rounder as far as the quarterback goes. You know, maybe other coaches don't see that and don't see the good things in players. And, you know, some of these guys like, you know, and I know he's not a good guy and everything, but Brandon Browner, I mean, when he came in here, I thought, this guy looks like a defensive end. He can't play corner. So Pete has been very innovative in that way, so that, you know, maybe it's the other way around, that they don't get there and have those opportunities because other coaches can't get as much out of players as Pete Carroll does. And I think that gets taken for granted.
Yeah, I mean, it might be fair, you know. I feel like last year, if they were healthy, they might have had a decent shot at getting to the big game. But we all, if you really understand this game, you know you got to get lucky towards the end of that run. You know, you got to have guys healthy. You got to have a ball bounce your way. There are a lot of things that need to happen. So he's been in two Super Bowls, could have won two. I mean, that game was on TV the other day, actually, against the Patriots, and I watched that whole game.
Painful.
You know,
well, Gabe, we don't know what you're talking about, Bump. I don't know what you're talking about.
Too painful. They could have won two. Yeah, I mean, they could have won two and maybe made an appearance in one, but it's the idea that you have a chance to. I want people to – who's the worst team in the league last year as far as record? Who's the worst team in the league?
Cincinnati.
Cincinnati. That's right.
Yep. Imagine being a Cincinnati Bengals fan for the last 10 years. You know what I'm saying? Like,
or a Dolphins fan.
They don't have a chance to win. You go into halfway through the season, you're like, season's over. I'm just going to show up and just support my guys. With this team, they actually have a chance every single week to win, and they are in the race late in the season. That's all you can ask for.
Yeah, good stuff. And we'll continue this conversation. It's just, and you guys can continue to weigh in on the text line, 710-710, the Busy Hard Seltzer text line. I was just thinking about it. I just don't know if we truly appreciate how consistent they have been. And John is a big part of that as well, not to discount him, but just Pete as a head coach. You've had a lot of stability, man, a lot of stability where other franchises have been completely unstable and just kind of thrashing about looking for somebody that can lead their organization. Let's take two.
It's official. The NBA Board of Governors voted 29-1 on Thursday to approve the league's 22-team format to restart the season in Orlando, Florida. The only no vote was the Portland Trailblazers, who reportedly preferred a 20-team format.
Yeah, it's a convoluted thing. When you read through it, it's sort of hard to understand. You know, they've got, you know, the top 16 teams in the Eastern Conference and Western Conference are going to be joined by teams currently within six games of eighth place in the two conferences. That's New Orleans, Portland, San Antonio, Sacramento, Phoenix, and Washington. There's a play-in tournament that will include the number 8 and 9 teams in the conference if the ninth seed finishes the regular season within four games of eighth. Blah, blah. I mean, it is really convoluted. All I care about is there's going to be basketball in one way, shape, form, or another, and I look forward to seeing it.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at too, Bob. Same thing. It makes you wonder why the Trailblazers wanted a 20-team format. I'm just trying to look at the standings and see if, you know, maybe there was a couple teams in there that they didn't want in there. I'm not sure why that was, but yeah, pretty overwhelming, 29-1. I mean, that's huge.
Yeah, I honestly don't care about the specifics at this point. I'm just happy that guys are going to be out there playing ball and that my Lakers have a chance to get what's rightfully theirs, Bob, as a championship this year. Let's go.
Lakers.
Asterisk.
At least 5 Alabama football players have tested positive for COVID-19 after participating in a group workout ahead of voluntary team workouts starting next week.
Yeah, and I thought Bump asked a good question in our show notes. You know, what's the threshold? What's too much? You've got to believe they've taken into account somebody's going to come up with this. Somebody's going to test positive, more than one. What can we tolerate? What's the limit? At what point do we change course or do we shut it down? It's interesting. I assume they did all of the due diligence. I'm going to go out on a limb and say they didn't go, hey, seems good, all clear, let's just start, everybody's going to be fine. I think they understand the risks, and there are going to be people that test positive, and they've got a plan in place for it. But that's not the news you want to see right out of the gate before anything truly gets going.
Yeah, it seems like a high amount. But like Bomb said, what's an acceptable number? I mean, I was looking at, like, in the state of Washington, if I'm not mistaken, it's 0.3%. You know, so is it that? Is it, I mean, this is certainly higher than that, because they have 60, 70, 80 guys out there. So, and then, you know, what's the severity of, you know, the symptoms and things like that? So there's going to be a lot to work through here. And this is why I keep saying, you know, the NFL is going to benefit from this greatly, because there's going to be some trial and error.
You know, I think that with Alabama going through this, we're really going to see what they're going to do, right? Alabama, it's like they're the guys when it comes to college football. Nick Saban already has a statue at Alabama probably somewhere, you know what I'm saying? So he's going to have influence on this situation. His opinion is going to be heard. So I think it's – obviously you don't want anyone to walk away with the virus, but you're kind of – interested to see how they are going to respond. This isn't like this is some rinky dink D1 school that no one's heard about. This is Alabama, so it's high profile. Now they have to respond and have to put something out, and Nick Saban's gonna have a say. So I want to see how they respond to this. If we're gonna happen to anybody first, I'm interested to see that it's Alabama and how they're gonna go forward.
All right, coming up, we're gonna check in with our Mariners insider Shannon Dreher, who's gonna be probably pretty excited to know that Jim is off today, so she won't have to deal with that. That's coming up with Bob, Dave, and Moore. We got Michael Bumpus in for Jim Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up in less than 15 minutes, Peter King's released his NFL power ranking, so we're going to see where the Seahawks and their NFC West rivals rank. That's coming up, but right now we talk some baseball with our Mariners insider, Shannon Dreher, who may be relieved to know that Jim Moore is on vacation this week. We've got Michael Bumpus here, Shannon.
It is always good to have Michael Bumpus there. I won't say much about the other.
Okay. Some things are just better left unsaid. I get it. Hey, before we get into some Mariner specifics here, I just want to get your take on the latest news in baseball. I keep going back and forth. I was telling these guys, I'm confused now. I don't know whether I should be optimistic or pessimistic. And every time I see a reported proposal, I look at it and go, well, they're not going to accept that. And that's just the latest is Major League Baseball rejected the players' offer for a 114-game regular season, and they did not plan to make a counterproposal, which I don't think is great. We had heard, you know, the suggestion, it wasn't an official proposal of a 50-game season, but that seems like a non-starter for the players. How are you feeling? Are you optimistic? Where are you at with this? Because it just doesn't look great.
My first feeling is I am very annoyed. I think that these are things that should have been worked out a long time ago, should have been worked out behind closed doors. And I'm not feeling the sense of urgency with this that I think we should have been feeling from all along. And then, of course, the general bad look all around, which we've talked about quite a bit. So that's the first thing I'm feeling. The second is when you get to that 50 games, if you look at the legalese of all of this, and this is, to me, my feeling would be I think there is going to be something. And at a minimum, there can be 50 games per their agreement that they made March 26th. The agreement was the players would get prorated salaries. The commissioner could start the season and set how many games. So he can say, hey, we're going to have a season. It's going to be 50 games. You'll get your prorated salary. You want to play, come play. You don't want to play, don't come play. We won't pay you. So I think that is where that comes from. They're not negotiating a season length right now, but my understanding is there are some other negotiations going on. I think that it will be opened up, but I think both sides at some point have to give something back. Neither have done that as of yet. To me, when you look at the 114 games that the players were saying, when you look at the 50 that the owners are saying right now, what is right in the middle? Well, that would be 82, which is what everybody was assuming it would be. So if I'm in charge of this whole thing, I'm like, hey, 82 games, almost, you know, just over a half season. You take 10%, 15%. Maybe we defer some. Let's go. And I don't understand why it cannot get to that. I've heard others express the same with the damage that's being done to the game. You would hope that they would get to something quickly, be it 70, be it 80. I don't think it's going to be 50. It's an option. But one way or another, I think we are going to see something. And the other thing that I would point at is clubs are getting ready to play. Players are getting ready to play. Players have been working out this entire time. They're showing up at spring training facilities right now. And in the home ballparks, all sorts of things are happening from what I'm hearing across the league and getting those ballparks ready for what they will have to go through in the safety protocols. So I don't think you do all of that work and not play. But, you know, obviously we're not there. We've got a long way to go. And, you know, they are beyond being on the clock right now. The clock's run past them. They got to get going.
How about that, Shannon Dreher, annoyed on a day when Jim Moore is not here? That's incredible. And I'm with you on that, Shannon. Hey, you mentioned talking to some of the players, and I've said, you know, some guys are going to come out of this thing better than others. From what you've been talking about, you mentioned the guys working hard. Who are some of the – because we don't even ask you about players anymore, and that's usually what we ask you about because you know those guys. But tell us about some of the guys that have been working hard and maybe some guys that are going to come out of this thing thing, what kind of stories that you've heard that some of these guys may come out of this in really good shape? Is there anybody being lazy? I mean, I don't expect you to call them out, but maybe more on the positive side. You know, what are some of the things you're hearing from the players?
Well, the things that I've heard, and we've heard this from the get-go, is they just all have a different level of what they can do where they're at. You know, some have home gyms. Some have had almost access to different – a couple of players have had access to hitting facilities. Jared Kelnick's family owns a hitting facility, an entire baseball facility, so he's been able to work out the entire time. Tim Lopes has been able to get into a hitting facility the entire time, and he's been very close to Tim Laker as well. In California, over in Florida, D. Gordon has got a lot of the stuff that he needs to do. Talked to a minor leaguer, Austin Shenton, last week. He lives up in Bellingham, and he's the one who did the 10,000 calorie in a day challenge. And he built a batting cage. He built an entire batting cage in his parents' backyard. So some people have done things like that. A lot of the young players have been in Arizona. There are like 9 or 10 that have been in that area. You're talking about your J.P. Crawford, Jake Fraley, Justin Dunn. Fraley and Dunn are living together right now. Evan White has been there for most of the time, and they have been able to get into the facility and been working out there for the past week. So just different levels of work and different guys having different things available to them. Of course, Tom Murphy, everybody made a big deal. He is not a guy that is very social media inclined, but when this thing started out, he decided, you know what, I want to give a little bit back. I'm going to show everybody my workouts. And his first workout was showing, you don't think you have something to work with? Sure you do. Go outside, find a hill. And he, you know, showed different things that you could do running up a hill. And he's had, I'm not sure there's so much challenges, but I've heard of minor leaguers picking up the challenge because he is the workout guy on the team. But he's posted those on Instagram, exactly what he's doing and how he's doing it, number of reps and whatnot. So it's really been all across the board what different guys have been able to do and not been able to do. But it sounds like, and we talked about this earlier, the pitchers could be ahead of the game. They've been able, it's easier to get out there and throw than it is to hit. So I think that's where we are with that.
For the record, I have consumed 10,000 calories in a day, but never burned them off. So.
No, that was not the challenge.
He kept them. Okay, sorry.
Hey, Shannon, so we know that the Mariners have a young team. They're really young. And say this proposal goes through, which we don't think it is. Say they go 50 to 60 games. Do you feel like the Mariners will be more compelled to try to get these youngsters up to the bigs and see how they do? Or do you think they'll kind of do the opposite and slow their development down?
Well, that's the hard thing, because nobody wants to slow the development down, and nobody knows how this is going to impact everybody. But you don't want to lose a year of development, and it looks like you're going to see that with the minor leaguers. And what about your prize prospects? You wonder about that. But the problem is, especially if it's a shorter season, 50 or 60 games, service time. You lose that service time, and there's so much value in that. So I think for some players, that is going to be a tough decision to make. I think I've heard that you could see Jared Kelnick, if it was like an 82-game season, on an expanded roster, and I don't know how that's going to work toward service time, but if it's less, do you see him? I don't think we see Julio Rodriguez. I don't think you see Cal Raleigh. I think in some situations where you have a more veteran player that can step in, if it's a shorter season, you're going to see that. But there's going to be a lot to weigh in that regard. And then I think the hope is, and Jerry DePoto's talked about this a couple of times, but he said that he remains optimistic that they can get something for some of their minor league players as the year goes on. And that might be, a shorter fall season or just a select group that get to work out. But regardless, I think at some point they will get their off-season programs going. And this is a strength of the Mariners and something that they've been working hard at developing over the last 4 years. And so they will have that for their young players at some point. But the question of them getting games, we don't know yet.
Quickly before the break here, Shannon, we're running up against it, but I've got to believe if there's a silver lining to this, it's that Mitch Haniger can heal. What do we know about his health?
Well, he has been healing, but it's been a little bit tough because he's been in California where they have had the really tough rules, and it's not like he could go out and go and see a physical therapist. And when you are working with a core injury, and that was the more significant, you remember he had the back surgery and that sounded so bad. the back surgery was, you know, a very small incision, not much to it. It's the core surgery that you think more of. And the physical therapy in coming back from a core surgery is very meticulous. You make one wrong step and you set the whole thing back, and you can set it all the way back to zero. So he's been doing that on his own. He has definitely progressed, but they are going to be super, super cautious with him, and part of that will be because of everything that he wasn't able to do with somebody watching him while he was going through it.
Good stuff. Shannon Dreher, our Mariners insider. With Shannon, we appreciate it. We will talk to you again soon.
All right, guys.
There you go. Talking some baseball. Speaking of baseball, we got another edition of Mariners Classic tonight at 7 p.m. Ichiro notches his 10th straight year of 200-plus hits. That's back in 2011. Brought to you by Roofers and Waterproofers Local 54. Well, I told you, Peter King's released his NFL power rankings. We'll see where the Seahawks stack up against the rest of the NFC West. That's coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll talk some football with Professor John Clayton here with Bob, Dave, and Moore. We got Michael Bumpus in for Jim Moore this week. A reminder, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. It's driven by the Dubin Law Group. You can download it for free. It's available. It's convenient. Take us outside in the good weather and listen to the show. You can listen to the podcast. All that stuff is available for you right there. Peter King released his NFL power rankings, and I wouldn't say there are any big surprises in it. He goes, you know, 1 through 32 here, and his number one team is the defending Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs. Not a big surprise, right? They beat San Francisco in the Super Bowl. He's got Baltimore at number two. I feel like Baltimore could take a step back. They were a 14-game winner last year. I think they're going to be good. I think Lamar Jackson's still going to be good, but I see their win total going down. I see his numbers individually going down. I think Pittsburgh could step back up and get their affairs in order. He's got number three is New Orleans. Number four, he's got San Francisco. This is where it gets maybe a little dicey, a little too much hype. He's got Tampa Bay, number five. That's a 7-9 team from last year, I believe. And right behind them, Seattle at number six. So he's got them behind San Francisco as the only other NFC West team ahead of them, which is fair enough. Any problems with where Seattle is at as it pertains to where Tampa Bay is at?
Yeah, I saw this last week, and somebody made the point, and I brought this up to the professor last week, I think it was, that, you know, Brady's worst turnover year was 16 turnovers. And I want to say that Jameis Winston had like 35. So, I mean, yeah. There's 19 more possessions.
That's for insane.
I mean, even if he has his worst year, if my math is correct, you know, you're going to get the ball 19 more times than you did last year. So, but you know, and the professor has brought this up. I was looking up Tampa Bay, their defense, their run defense was number one, but their pass defense was, I think, 30th. And they gave up 30 touchdowns, and not too many teams gave up more touchdowns. So they've still got some work to do. I like pieces of their, obviously their front seven is good. They got two of the, well, Levante David, I know, is getting on, and I know, I'm sorry, this isn't the Tampa Bay Buccaneer radio show, but I do like Devin White, the linebacker there, and, you know, they've got a good front seven, but they're going to have, yeah, so that one I thought was a little bit aggressive. I don't know, anytime anybody puts the Seahawks, you know, like in the top 10 or number six in this case, I'm always kind of thankful, because I guess we all feel up here like we get disrespected or whatever. But yeah, I thought that was, you know, fair enough as far as rating goes and judging the offseason and everything. I thought it was pretty accurate.
I thought it was all right. I mean, that's the Tom Brady effect, right? You put Tom Brady on dang near any team that he was interested in, they're probably going to be in the top five. I wouldn't put them in front of the Seahawks just because the Seahawks have shown over the past couple of years that, you know, they got a good thing going. And you mentioned Tampa Bay's pass defense. I mean, they're in the league with Matt Ryan, with a Drew Brees. We'll see what Teddy Bridgewater does at Carolina. So they're going, yeah. they're they're going to get the ball thrown against them. You know what I mean? And Tom Brady can't play defense. Gronk is not a defender. You know what I mean? I look at that offense and I'm like, yes, this is a top five offense. But what about that defense? You know, and you can say the same about the Seahawks, about not getting pressure on the quarterback or whatnot. But the Seahawks have proven over the last couple of years that even with all those challenges, they're going to get it done. So simply, this is just a Tom Brady effect. I respect Tom Brady. You got six rings. You know what I mean? So you're going to have some type of influence. But I would have liked for the Hawks to be five and then Tampa Bay to be six.
And you see, just as far as the NFC West goes, he's got the 49ers ahead of him, which, okay, fair enough. The 49ers are a really good team. Looking at the other two teams, he's got the Rams at 16 and he's got the Cardinals at 18. Which is, I've got those guys flip-flop, and we've talked about this before, Dave, so I'll throw it to you, Bump. I think the Rams are going to finish in last place in this division. I think Arizona is set to really improve on what they were last year. I don't think they're quite a playoff team yet, but I think they take a big step. They get a full season of Kenyon Drake. They just brought in DeAndre Hopkins, who is arguably the best receiver in their league or amongst the best receivers in the league. Kyler Murray's got a year under his belt, and he was really good last year. This is, you know, and you look at what they did in the draft. This is a pretty impressive roster. We'll see how long it takes for it to come together. But I think you're looking at either the Seahawks or 49ers winning the division. They're 1 and 2. I think the Cardinals are 3, and I put the Rams 4th.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. You look at the development of Kyler Murray. I think we all expected him to come in and struggle. He looked like a rookie at times, but he also looked like a guy who could lead a team and control an offense. And then you bring in arguably the best receiver in the league. And let's not forget about Larry Fitzgerald. I know he's not the fastest guy in the world, but he's made a transition to the slot. And I think that's where older guys will have success. You still got a quick twitch. You can still shake a guy and sit into a zone. You're not going to beat anybody over the top. That wasn't his game anyway. And then let's talk about their head coach. Now he has another year in the game. So their trajectory is up for sure. On the flip side, you look at the Rams. You got a Jared Goff who's been struggling. Yeah, their run game was hurt. The offensive line couldn't get it done. And McVay's going to have to grow a bit. This is the year McVay's going to have to do his best coaching. He had the luxury of driving a Ferrari up and down Rodeo Drive. Now he's got to get that Civic going, man. He's got to soup it up, put an engine in it, and see what he can do. You know, he's going to have to coach his butt off. So I can see
Honda
those two flipping for sure. Probably not a Honda. We'll give him like an Accord. You know, we'll give him an Accord.
Okay.
Bumper, are you more of a Honda Civic guy or a Maserati guy?
I'm a Honda Civic, man. I'm a buy it stock, put some rims on it, put a system in it, change the engine, get an exhaust pipe on there, a performance exhaust pipe, and keep it moving.
That's awesome. Hey, all this week, Seattle celebrating, 710 ESPN Seattle celebrating Mariners Legends Week with interviews with Mariner Hall of Famers and all-time greats across all of our shows all week long. We had an awesome conversation yesterday with Jamie Moyer. If you missed that, it's available on the podcast page, 710sports.com. Really fun conversation with him. But don't miss a single moment. You can follow along on air. You can follow online or with the 710 Sports app. So check that out. Really good stuff from some big names in the history of this Mariners organization. Well, the NFL is allowing coaches in the building tomorrow. So does it feel like we're on the right track to get this season started on time? We'll see if all coaches are going to be allowed. Every state's a little different. We'll talk to the professor about all of that coming up. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.